Blog Talk Radio.
Anything you folks want to know about the fascinating world of pro hockey, here we go.
Drop that puck! 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 Drop that puck!
Take a seat, because you've just been sent to the Sin Bin with your host, recently returned from his forced deportation to Canada and that country's subsequent refusal to accept him, Paul Rogers!
All right. I want to welcome everyone back to the Seattle Sin Bin. This is our season premiere as we open season two of the Seattle Sin Bin. It has been too long. Otto, are you with me?
You know what? I almost forgot how this thing works, but I think yeah. I'm getting the hang of it.
Yes, I am. Yeah, me too. You know, when that song came on and they started saying, drop that puck, I thought, oh, my God, I missed that. but when's the last time we did a show? Was it back in June? Something like that?
We had, you know, the last show we did, I remember specifically my seat was in the waiting pool. It was probably about 85 degrees, and I had a nice cold adult beverage. And that was about mid-June. I want to say about mid-June. And then we had hopes and dreams of coming back with a hopeful news in the summer, but it didn't quite happen that way. But you know what? We're here to keep on plugging away.
Yeah, you know it. You know, and obviously, you know, it was definitely a punch in the gut when it turned out that no one applied in Seattle for expansion. But you know, and you and I talked about this in the weeks following it, and we weren't sure what we were going to do. We weren't honestly sure if we were even going to continue the show. And, you know, we kind of just decided, you know what, this isn't over. And, you know, we still believe that we're going to get the NHL in Seattle someday. And you know what, we could just sit around moping about it. We could sit around whining about it. But in the end, we're going to build the Seattle Sin Bin. And then when the NHL does get here, we're going to hit the ground running. And so what we decided to do was we decided to expand our regional coverage of hockey. So we got beat writers working for us. We're covering every team in the U.S. division of the WHL. We're covering the Washington Huskies. And in a few minutes, we're going to have our beat writer, Lorenzo Villalobos, on with us. And he's going to talk about how the season's going for them. But how do you think it's gone so far? I mean, with the expanded coverage at SeattleSinBin.com.
You know, I think it's gone great. I've got a lot of positive feedback from, you know, a lot of interest in what we're doing and, you know, the kind of coverage we're doing, especially with teams that are not in traditional large markets. Like, you know, in Seattle and Portland, they have there's some Times coverage of some, you know, there's the fan coverage, there's some North, you know, Cairo ESPN coverage and the T-Birds, and I know the Oregonian has some coverage on the, you know, the bigger media outlets have coverage, but, you know, I'm really excited to see the coverage, you know, of our two Eastern Washington teams that might not typically get a lot of coverage, as well as the coverage of UW Huskies, you know, by Lorenzo. You know, I'm really excited to see that because, you know, you don't really see a lot of coverage on college hockey around here, but I hope that continues to increase as we go forward.
Yeah, and you know, I think you and I both agree. Our goal is to build the predominant website for hockey in the Pacific Northwest. And you know, we're not there yet. It's going to take some time, but I'll tell you, in our first year of covering the WHL, we have press passes for three of the five teams, and we're working on a fourth. And when Lorenzo comes on, he doesn't really have a press pass. He's involved with coverage of the team, so it's like he has one. And so we're getting really good access so far. And, you know, it's been a small beginning, but I really think that we're going to build it up. And, you know, we've also you know, we're going to keep covering the effort to bring the NHL to town. And in the meantime, we're going to keep covering the NHL. Jacob Hamar and Paul Buxton will be providing NHL coverage for us. We've got Sam Hinchy covering the Tri-City Americans. We've got Kevin Dudley covering the Spokane Chiefs. We've got Jubilee Lee and Austin Olney covering the Silver Tips. And we've got, I'm going to run out of names here, Brandon Rivers and Trampas Adams covering the Winterhawks. And, you know, we're working on the Thunderbirds coverage, too. That's kind of in progress. But, you know, it's going pretty well. It's going pretty well, and I'm really happy with it. But let's get back, before we bring Lorenzo in, let's get back to what all has gone on since you and I left the air. And it's been a ton of things. And, you know, I guess we have to start with, you know, the day we found out that no one in Seattle was going to apply. I mean, what went through your head when you found that out?
Well, I mean, Paul, the day before the deadline, we're having reports that we were not just one bid, but we were going to have multiple bids to get a team to Seattle. And so when we went from two, perhaps three bids to the NHL to zero, that was such a big blow. I was not in a happy place when that came down. But, you know, I've had a couple of months to, you know, to kind of get over that. And, you know, really, it's just a process, man. I mean, I think we both understand once this whole thing started, even, you know, with Chris Hansen and Soto Project and all those other projects and all these delays and all these different things, that it's just, you know, it's just a long game, you know. I mean, and the more that we continue to go forward, the more clear that it's becoming to me that this is just it's a process, and we're in this is a long game. So I'm okay with it right now. I would like some, you know, more positive news coming out. Things just need to start happening, you know. Or It's just difficult to kind of keep on plugging away, but, you know, we'll keep on doing that.
Yeah. All right. And so, once again, in a little bit, we're going to bring Lorenzo Villalobos in, and we're going to talk Huskies hockey. And I forgot to mention later on in the show, Mike Baker from Sonics Rising, who is our host website. They actually host the Simbin for us. And Mike Baker wrote an interesting article today where he had reached out to the Seattle City Council members or the candidates for Seattle City Council. There's an election for that next week. And he did a really good article kind of predicting where they might lie on the arena issue. So it's a good voter guide to go by. So he's going to come on a little bit later in the show. But back to this. So a couple weeks ago, Jeff Baker came out with an article, and it was kind of an article that just kind of summed up where we are now, and it revealed some details about what happened and what caused the debacle to happen where no one applied. And it kind of starts with Tukwila. What did Jeff say about Tukwila?
Well, Jeff basically said that, you know, part of that had it was a last-minute kind of thing, and, you know, he lost his lead investor. And, you know, apparently Baker also mentioned that the city was shocked that Partizak didn't apply for expansion team. And, you know, there's some uncertainty if, you know, they're going to require Partizak to kind of chip in some more money to really complete the process, or – you know, Tukwila might be out. You know, I hope not. You know, I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, that's kind of the way.
That would be a big blow. That would be a big blow if Tukwila fell through, because right now Soto's the furthest along, to be sure. But we've kind of been looking at Tukwila as the fastest path to an NHL team. And if that doesn't happen, we could be waiting a while because it seems like we'll be waiting on the NBA. And then the other thing
exactly.
that Baker said, the other thing that Baker mentioned that really kind of shocked me because, you know, months ago when word started surfacing about Tequila and Bellevue, everyone was saying this is going to be all private proposals. But it turns out, according to Jeff, that Bellevue was requesting $200 million from the city of Bellevue, whoever was it was Jack Sperling.
That's right.
And it really surprised me that they had been requesting $200 million up front from the city of Bellevue. And that was really just kind of disappointing, wasn't it?
It was. You know, I mean, I didn't know. We didn't really have that many details about, you know, Bellevue. We didn't know if that was going to be a full, you know, a full private building or to be a combination. But, you know, apparently when the city was, they were hesitant about signing over that public contribution, Bellevue's main investor bailed too. So now it's like, you know, it looks like it kind of all circled back to Soto a bit, unless Barzak's able to get that investor, that would pull it.
Yeah.
But
I believe that he's trying. You know, a lot of people think that that Ray Bartoszek and Tequila was kind of a red herring all along. I don't believe that at all. I believe he was trying to get it done. And, you know, you try going into a major project where the deadline is just about to happen, you're just about to submit the application, and at the last minute your investor backs out. I mean, that's going to flummox anyone. And so, I think he's still trying to land that investor, and I think he's trying as hard as he can. But, you know, we have to accept that it might not happen, and that would be very disappointing. And then Jeff also, over the weekend, was the first one to report on this, actually, about the Maritime Coalition that submitted the letter to the city council asking them to delay. what we really have been missing all along, Otto, in this entire Soto Arena process, we've really been missing some delays. And we've really been missing the opportunity to talk things out more and to research more and to, you know, what is the port ever going to have any common sense, frankly?
Well, you know what else we've been missing, we haven't done any of, is talk about Key Arena, too. So let's not forget to throw that in there.
Oh, yeah, Key Arena,
but,
yeah.
You know, it's like Key Arena is the arena or the project. That's the big, like, the big bugaboo. You know, it keeps on getting brought up by certain members of the city council, by the maritime industry, is that Kiwa, why here? Why not Key Arena? And like, you know, apparently there's this new study where, you know, apparently the footprint is okay at Key Arena, but then take away the footprint for a minute, you still got the traffic situation down in South Lake Union. And like, I swear some of these people, they've never been down in South Lake Union area because you try to put an arena down there with all the buildings going up right now in the South Lake Union area, and you're trying to put up an arena right there, a Key Arena, you know, having like 20,000 people every night to
You know, the area has changed since the Sonics left, right? I mean, the traffic is now worse than it was.
It's nonsense.
But, you know, I could almost live with that, Otto, if they could answer one question for me. Who is going to pay that $285 million? And I wrote a piece about that yesterday. And it's not going to be Chris Hansen. He wants Soto. It's not going to be Victor Coleman because he can't even put in NHL first money to Soto. It's not going to be Ray. It's not going to be Thomas Toll or any of the Bellevue guys. And it's sure not going to be the city council. And we know it's not going to be the port. So if you want to talk about red herrings, that is the red herring. I mean,
is the red herring. A non-starter. I mean, if you can come to me and give me an investor that's willing to put up that money, I mean, then maybe there's a possibility of discussion. But you know what? Sally Backshaw, I believe, she even said this is not even like, we can't even consider this until we're in phase three of the Sound Transit, you know, phase three of their kind of expansion. And, you know, there's no mass transit.
And here's the other part of it.
So,
It took 2.5 years to do an FEIS study on Soto. And I don't care what they tell you, they're going to have to do another FEIS study on Key Arena, right?
Right.
They have to do it because it's a major renovation. They have to do that study. How long is that study going to take? And who's going to oppose that once it gets serious? You know somebody will. And so if you're talking about arenas inside the city limits of Seattle, it's Soto. It has to be Soto. It's the best location. We've got the paperwork done. There's just a couple more votes. We just need to push that one across the finish line, and I think Chris Hansen will.
No, and completely agree. But in the end, we need a team. That's gonna be the
we do need a team. But we have to push this across the finish line to make it easier to get one. So we have to finish that last piece, or we're going to be in this position for years. All right. Enough bemoaning everything that's gone on. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Mr. Lorenzo Villalobos, and I really hope I'm pronouncing that properly, will join us to talk Husky hockey.
The Ferris State Bulldogs beat the University of Michigan Wolverines.
The Ferris State University Bulldogs defeat the Michigan State University Spartans 4-1. And the Bulldogs win 8-1 over the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Ferris State hockey season tickets are on sale now. Reserve your spot for all 19 home games. Includes 2 games each versus Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. $175 for adults, $80 for students. Contact the ticket office at 591-2888 or log on to FerrisStateBulldogs.com.
The Vancouver Canucks Team Store is the only place to get all your authentic Vancouver Canucks merchandise. $22 keychains. $45 t-shirts made in Indonesia, but screen-printed in Canada. The Vancouver Canucks Team Store, where the players shop. Because making $5 million a year is the only way you can afford this crap.
Folks want to know about the fascinating world of pro hockey. Here we go.
Drop that puck! Drop that puck! Drop that puck!
Take a seat, because you've just been sent to the Sin Bin with your host, recently returned from his forced deportation to Canada and that country's subsequent refusal to accept him, Paul Rogers!
Drop that puck!
See ya! Yeah!
All right, let's show them what we got, guys.
Okay.
Right. Get out there on the ice and let them know you're there.
All right, welcome back to our second segment of our season opening episode of the Seattle Sin Bin. I am your host, Paul Rogers. My co-host, Otto Rogers, is with us. And on the line is one Lorenzo Villalobos. Lorenzo, did I pronounce that right?
It's actually Villalobos, but don't worry. It's a whole lot better than mispronouncing Mike Hruzelnicki's last name.
Villalobos. Okay.
That's
right. I think I can remember that.
I just wanted to say something. I know you guys were talking about the Key Arena situation. I actually happened to attend one of my first T-Bird games back in 1998 when Brett DiCecco was their top scorer, and that I'll be honest with you, it was the worst god awful arena I had ever been to for a hockey game.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, if you talk to Sightlines, I went to the special basketball game they had from Jamal Crawford earlier in the summer that Chris Hansen helped sponsor, and sideline wise for basketball, it's terrific. I mean, you can't beat it. But it's, you know, as we all know, it's the concourse sizes, it's the footprint size, it's the entry and exit for shipping and receiving. You know, it's all those things. And yeah, for hockey, it would be horrible. So it really is just a non-starter all the way around.
Absolutely.
So Lorenzo, you are earlier this year, we put out an inquiry for people to cover local hockey teams in the Northwest, and one of the things we wanted to cover was the Huskies, and you responded, and you've done a great job. Tell us a little bit about yourself to your readers. How did you get into hockey, and how did you get involved with the Huskies?
Well, here's my quick intro. Actually, I'm Lorenzo Villalobos Jr. I am a Southern California native, a lifelong suffering Kings fan until 2012 when we finally won the Cup. I moved up here for the first time in 1998 here in the Puget Sound. I'm an active duty service member in the military, getting ready to retire as of September next year. And this is my third time here in the Puget Sound, and I just fell in love with this place. And one of the things that I was very fascinated with is that this is a dedicated sports town. I mean, you got the Mariners, the Seahawks. Obviously, the Sonics was the household name, the Huskies. But little did I know hockey actually existed here when I went, like I mentioned, my first Seattle Thunderbirds game in 98. I kept coming back here in 2000, you know, still following the NHL during those times. And then I was wondering, how in the hell can a major metropolitan market, I believe this is the 15th largest metropolitan area in the country, and still does not have a major professional hockey team. Last time we had a pro team was the Tacoma Sabercats in 2002 when the then WCHL folded. And I've just been following hockey since I was a Kings fan, or the Kings were still wearing their gold and purple jerseys, when Luke Robitaille and Jimmy Carson and Marcel Dion were still on that front line helping out Glenn Healy or Mario Lassard on the goal. And I've just been following the Kings ever since. Everyone said, oh, you've been a Kings fan since Gretzky came to L.A. No, I actually had to learn the game by myself just by watching the games or listening to Bob Miller and Nick Nixon do the games on the radio back then. But it's been a lifelong addiction ever since then.
Right. Now, most people that follow our show know that I'm a pretty recent convert to hockey. In fact, I really didn't start following it until the last year and a half. And I paid a lot of attention to it last season. But the more I got into it, the more surprised I got. I mean, I was aware of the WHL teams, but up until about a year ago, I honestly had no idea that the Huskies had a hockey team. Tell us a little bit about the program for people that might not be familiar with it. What league do they play in? And, you know, the level of competition – and, you know, the arena. Tell us a little bit about the program.
The Husky hockey team is a club sport team not funded by the University of Washington Athletic Department. It actually began, I believe, in the 1999-2000 year. At that time, of course, the Huskies were, you know, they didn't have NCAA schools that were nearby that was going to be able to play with them. The club has been a member of the Pac-8 conferences. I'm reading off of the HuskyIceHockey.com website here. The club has been a member of the Pac-8 conference since 1995, been a member of the ACHA as well, and they compete in the West Region Division 2. There are approximately 120 teams across the country in Division 2, four regions, 30 teams competing in the ACHA West Region. Top four teams from each region receive an invitation to play in the national championship tournament. Now, keep in mind, the players, the coaches, they're not getting funded again, like I mentioned. They're all paying by their own dime. You know, they're getting the ice time. They're getting the travel time, going out to the other rinks against their opponents. You know, they're renting ice time also at Olympic View Arena to practice as well, you know. And we're just hoping that someday, you know, if this school, as well as all the other Pac-8 teams or Pac-12 teams, get hockey programs, we can get funded by the NCAA. And we have a very strong fan support. A lot of people don't understand that our games start at 9, sometimes 10 o'clock at night. And the reason for that is because you also have youth hockey that's happening throughout the day. You also have, you know, figure skaters on the Olympic View rink. And by the time all that's over with, it's time for us to play. And so they're members of the Pac-8 Conference. There's only 7 teams this year. We used to have 8, but, of course, everyone knows by now Arizona State's Pac-8 team moved over to a different conference within the ACHA, while the elite team moved on to the NCAA Division I school. So right. That is pretty much a brief breakdown of what we are as a club.
And there is, I mean, we talked to some people from the program last season. There's still an effort to take the program to Division I, is there not?
It is. And, you know, I would love to see the Pac-12 get involved in this, too, because when Arizona State last year shocked everybody, including myself, saying they got, like, what, $22 million from donors to start up the NCAA Division I program for their hockey team, I was blown out of my mind. I was like, okay, this is great.
Wow.
Is this a start where UW can do the same thing? Look at the University of Utah. They're already a major powerhouse in the ACHA Division II, possibly going up to Division I in the near future if that ever happens. But I would love to see these major universities actually get recognized out here on the West Coast as from as far as, you know, New England and say, wait, we have there's hockey out there on the West Coast. Why aren't they the major universities that we're so used to watching their football games and basketball programs? How come their hockey programs are club sports only? What can we do to actually get them on the same level as the Alaska schools, as North Dakota, as Minnesota's? You know, schools can really support that. And if somebody can say to the NCAA, hey, what can we do to bring in the money and give them the funds that they need to start building their program? I think that would be one step closer to making something a reality.
Right. And you mentioned the fan support is pretty strong. How many fans would come to a typical game?
You would see about close to 500 at Olympic View Arena. It's not a very big arena. You know, only one side of seating is on the ice. It's right between the penalty box and the scorer's table. Everyone can walk along the glass area, along the mats in front of the stands there. So you can fit in at least a good 500, sometimes a little bit bigger if you got like an Oregon coming up here for the I-5 Cup, which just happened a couple of weeks ago.
In a small arena like that, it might get pretty loud at times.
It does. You know, sometimes I even have a hard time listening to myself when you have a lot of fans screaming and hollering, just like the last Friday night home game we had against Oregon. I was barely having a hard time hearing myself through the speakers when I was doing the live webcast on the Mixlr website. And sometimes I had to cover the microphone with my hands just to hear myself speak clearly, and hopefully everybody else will be able to hear. So, it can get a little raucous at times. It just all depends, you know, who's coming in. And don't get me wrong, it's not just the Husky fans that are there. You also have fans from other schools traveling out here to Seattle and supporting their schools as well. Last season, at the beginning, our home opener against USC, we had several USC fans come up from Los Angeles and rooting on for the Trojans. Unfortunately, we did get swept. But, you know, it was that big of a deal where, you know, if we get the support from the visiting team's fans, you know, that's going to really help us out revenue-wise if we were to become an NCAA program.
Right. Otto, you had some questions about the season so far for the Huskies. Go ahead and fire some off.
Yeah. Hey, Lorenzo. Nice to finally talk to you in person or over the
Absolutely,
air.
Otto. Same here.
Hey. Yeah, so I noticed the Huskies are 4-4 on the season. And they when I was reading your game report against the Oregon, can you explain a little bit? There was a controversial tie against Oregon. Can you kind of explain what happened there and why there was no decision on that game against Oregon?
Just to quickly break down what happened. We were down to our last 10 seconds of the game. We were just up 1-0 and just 10 seconds away from jumping up to a 2-0 series lead in the I-5 Cup until Oregon's Joe Hoover tied it up with 0.8 seconds left.
Mm.
And one of our players got sent to the box right after that goal, went to overtime, killed off that penalty during that overtime, and then Oregon committed a penalty with under a minute left. They sent their guy to the box, so we had a huge opportunity to win it in overtime. Unable to convert on the power play, so myself, the broadcaster for Oregon, Isaac Rosenthal, he was doing the game. We're all pumped up getting ready for the shootout. Then all of a sudden we see a lot of the players huddle around the bench. I'm assuming, okay, well, who's going to take the first shot? Who's going to take the second shot? Then all of a sudden I see the referees and the linesmen huddle up around both benches and call off the game. And then out of nowhere, we just start seeing the players start lining up along the center ice red line and start shaking hands. I'm like, wait a second. This is not right here. What the hell is going on? Just to make it short, sweet, and simple, both coaches, Matt Cleeton and head coach Pat Leahy for Oregon, who was in his first year, then Eugene, collectively agreed to not do it due to the ACHA rules, which, by the way, follows closely to what the NCAA rule book says. Now, I personally will have to take a look, double-check on the NCAA rules as to how and why the ties have to stay that way. But none of us were aware that the Pac-8 rules do allow it for the standings, but it doesn't count into the ACHA standings. So it bugs the hell out of me that, you know, a conference game itself, which has had a history of overtime games, come to an end of shootouts, count in the standings, would not count into this year's standings overall. Does it hurt for us going to nationals in the near future, coming up in March? I really can't say right now because we're still early in the season. But at the same time, you know, what's more important, getting the I-5 Cup or trying to gain more points into our conference standings and our overall standings? So it's just I guess you can say it's a catch-22 situation that we experienced right there. That's
wow.
How it ended there.
That definitely seems pretty controversial. So
it does. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. No. Just another question. Just you mentioned the playoffs or the nationals. How does that work? Are the Huskies still in contention to get a spot in the nationals, or how do you see the rest of the season going?
This is how it works. They basically break it down on all regions in the ACHA Division II. The top 10 teams in each region automatically gets the bid to go to regionals. And if you don't crack the top 10, regardless whether you win the conference regular season and or tournament outright, you will not go to nationals. So as far as I see regarding the team going to nationals, in my opinion, they look pretty good. I mean, it's a 4-1-1 record right now. The only downfall is to those non-conference games that we lost this month so far. Of course, those are the two in Boise with Boise State, who was a very competitive team against us a couple of weeks ago. Boise State, by the way, went to nationals last year and I think they finished at 1-2. And then we just got pretty much mauled by a good Montana Tech team by double digits. Last Thursday night, we lost to Gonzaga. That was our third non-conference opponent of the year. But when we got back to conference play, it was I guess we pretty much got everything back to normal there. We lost the weekend opener to WSU. It was their first win of the season, and we got them back on Saturday afternoon. But overall, I think our chances in the season is looking bright right now. We have a couple of back-to-back non-conference weekends at home coming up with Western Washington coming down from Bellingham this Friday night. We'll have a Halloween weekend there. And then we have BYU coming up from Provo the following weekend. So in my opinion, if we can get those four games out of the way with big wins, I think our chances looks even better for us to get recognized to crack the top 10 in the regions first. And
That's
then hopefully by the end of the season, we can see ourselves headed out to nationals in March. Let's just see what happens on the ice first.
That's great news. Thanks, Lorenzo.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
All right. Well, Lorenzo, I want to thank you for coming on. And just so our listeners know, this is going to be a weekly thing. So every episode we're going to bring on a different beat writer. We're going to try and cover it's just going to be a revolving thing. We're going to cover each one of the teams once a week on the show this season. We're kind of excited about that. So we like the content there. And so, Lorenzo, thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely, Paul. And Otto, thanks a lot for having me on, and let's go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
All right, go Dogs. All right, that was Lorenzo Villalobos. I pronounced it right that time. No Villa, it's Villa. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we've got Mike Baker from SonicsRising.com already on the line for us. So we'll talk to him in just a second.
If a premium beer is to please a lot of people, it has to be good. It has to know the way to natural ingredients, what prime quality hops to seek out, what first-rate grains to choose. It must draw upon the Pacific Northwest's pure mountain water. But above all else, it must deliver fine taste. Today, one beer does it all. Mountain Fresh Rainier, a brew apart.
Anything you folks want to know about the fascinating world of pro hockey, here we go.
Drop that puck! Drop that puck! Drop that puck!
Take a seat, because you've just been sent to the Sin Bin with your host, Paul Rogers, who is a college graduate.
You went to Princeton, we're all Eastern, weren't you, Ned?
That's what it said in the yearbook, Jim.
All right, I want to welcome everyone to our third segment of the season-opening episode of the Seattle Sin Bin. I am Paul Rogers. My co-host is Otto Rogers. And on the line, we have Mr. Mike Baker, who is one of the old standbys from SonicCentral.com, which became SonicsRising.com. Mike, how are you?
I'm awesome.
You're awesome?
I'm doing pretty well.
All right.
I'm doing all right.
Good. So today you wrote a really good article at SonicsRising.com about the political situation with the arena. We've got an election coming up. What is it, next week?
Yep, week from tonight.
A week from tonight. And
yep.
for this, you had reached out to all the city council people or all the candidates who are running for city council, and you kind of plotted out where you think they were leaning on the arena. Tell us what you found out. You wrote about it in the article, but kind of sum it up for us. What did you find out with these inquiries?
I was a little bit surprised that so many people responded, actually. But, you know, we are following an 8-year-old team that doesn't exist anymore. But for some strange reason, people still respond to it. And a mm-hmm. lot of people are still very interested in it. And so when I sent out my 5 burning questions to the 18 council candidates, I got 7 responses, which I thought was pretty fair. And they answered all 5 of my questions, you know, honestly, which is great. Mm-hmm. And then I collected them all together. And what I found was nothing terribly surprising, except for I would say that some of the candidates knew more details about why they did or did not like a particular thing about the current arena proposal than I kind of anticipated. I really did kind of think that some of the new faces to Seattle politics might not be completely aware of this. And I did mm-hmm. spell out quite a bit of it in my email, but no, they knew what I was talking about and gave pretty good responses. I was pretty good, pretty happy about that.
Right. And so I'm looking through your article right now, and for Council District 1, we have Lisa Herbold versus Shannon Braddock. Neither one
yep.
responded. One Herbold yeah. worked for Licata, so she sounds like she might be a no.
She's probably
but
a no, yeah.
Shannon Braddock might be a different story. How do you have any inclination about how that race might go? Do we have any idea who might win that?
No, in fact, that's going to be probably one of the closest contested races. My feeling at this point, and I think anybody that is watching close enough has a feeling one way or another, that it probably will be Lisa Herbold, but, you know, nobody can say for sure. Shannon Braddock has worked for King County Councilman Joe McDermott, who also worked on the MLU, so she's familiar with this, and she also has a lot of broad support, so it's really not completely clear who has a big lead here.
Right, so that one's going to be down to the wire, it sounds like. Council District 2, we have Bruce Harrell, who was actually instrumental in getting the current MOU done, versus Tammy Morales. What did you find there?
Well, you know, neither responded to my email, and that's really sad because, you know, I actually thought Bruce might respond. He is likely going to win. He's been a proponent for some kind of solution for a long time, and a proponent of this particular solution once it became clear to him that it was a benefit to the city. He really did, at that point, embrace it.
Right. And so your sense is that you think that Bruce is going to prevail in this race?
Yeah, I do. It won't be all that close, surprisingly, but no, I think he's got this race.
Right. Well, that would be kind of, it would feel like a body blow if he lost, because he was, even when Chris Hansen first came forward, I remember he was at the forefront for saying, yeah, this is a great idea, even before he really knew any details. And so to me, Bruce is one of those that we have to have on there, it seems like.
Well, agreed. Exactly. He did, just say, let's bring this forward and really look at it and not just dismiss it out of hand.
Right, right. And then we move to one of the more interesting ones, which is District 3, and we have Sawant versus Pamela Banks. Banks didn't respond, but Sawant gave you a rather detailed response. So tell us about your impressions of what she said.
Well, it's her responses were more or less a summary of some of the things she said before, talking around making some kind of commitment. But I think it's interesting that she has not come out and just said no, and some of her. Answers to my questions really don't lead you to say that door is shut and that she would vote no. It isn't really there. You can see that by her answer, that her answers, she really is going to consider it, and hopefully she'll see the economic benefit to Seattle, but I just don't know. I have no idea. And it's likely that
right.
She will, be reelected.
So you think she's got a good shot at being reelected?
Oh, I do, yeah.
And going down further in the article, wow, she had a long response. So we have Council District 4, Rob Johnson versus Michael Maddox. What are your impressions there?
Well, this is like the opposite sides of the coin here. Both candidates responded, and Michael Maddox was a no, he doesn't support it, and a no, he doesn't. He's not in favor of the current proposal, but that he would fairly support the city if that was the direction the city went, which is a fair response, and. Rob Johnson is a proponent. He answered yes and yes to supporting the MOU and the EIS for the for following up on the arena in Soto, and also he wrote in one of his responses, which I thought was pretty funny, that when he was going to door to door and campaigning in his district, he was also advocating for a Sonics arena and for the Sonics to come back. You know, it's really amazing that 8 years later.
So it sounds like we want this guy.
Absolutely. It's odd that, you know, somebody, or at least I thought it was odd, but it's really not, that a guy, that somebody has this kind of interest in this, you know, something that is a major topic really in front of us with the new arena legislation coming to the council shortly, in a few months. So at least he is aware of what's going on. And, yeah, I think he's a proponent.
Sense that race is going?
I think Rob Johnson is in the lead. Don't know how much of a lead. I've heard a couple of different reports that put him a few points ahead. So if that comes to be, then great. It would be fantastic to have him on the council.
Right, definitely would. Okay, District 5, we have Deborah Juarez versus Sandy Brown. What do you think of that one?
Oh, that was really hard because that's my district. And Deborah did not answer my email, my repeated requests for answers to my burning questions. But Sandy Brown did. He was an emphatic yes. That he absolutely, in his words, absolutely, he supported the NBA and NHL and WNBA as part of the arts and entertainment in Seattle. So, you know, from the word go, he's supporting it. And that he's, you know, it looks like through his response, he has given it quite a bit of thought, which is great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, I don't know that he'll win, but we'll see.
Yeah. I've heard a few things behind the scenes, like Deborah Juarez might not really be anything to worry about for us, but, you know, since she's not responding and she's not really on the record for anything, it's hard to really say. But it sounds like Sandy Brown will be one we would definitely want, so we'll have to keep our eye on that. But you're not sure how that one's going to go?
Well, I'm hearing that Juarez is probably in the lead, though it's really hard to say at this point. I haven't seen polling data lately. I did see some, I did hear a month or two back how far that Deborah was in the lead. I can't say if that's the case today, but it probably is the case.
Right. Okay, District 6, we have Mike O'Brien, who is actually a key member of the council who helped get the MOU passed, versus Catherine Wheatbrook. How's that one going?
You know, neither one of them responded. Mike O'Brien was a yes vote on the MOU, and a pretty good steward of keeping the MOU on track in the Seattle City Council. So it'd be great if he won, and what I hear is that he is in the lead in polling. Catherine Wheatbrook does get a lot of support from the maritime industry. You know, I'm just going to assume that she isn't going to be as supportive as Michael Bryan. I'll just put it that way.
Well, I'll go one further. She's supported by Maritime. I would say there's no way she supports us. But that's just an assumption on my part, but I think it's a safe one. So District 7, we come to one of the more enigmatic current council members, Sally Bagshaw, versus Deborah. How do you even pronounce her last name? Zacardis?
Zacardis,
yes. Okay. So Sally was a yes on the MOU, but she's always kind of gone back and forth on it and continues to. How's that one going?
Well, it does, Sally's probably going to win fairly easily. She has taken up a lot of the, she says a lot of positive things about wanting to get something done, but mm-hmm. she also, in her remarks, seems to be siding with the Port of Seattle with the location of the arena. I'm a little bit surprised. We'll see how it goes at the final vote, but that's what it looks like today.
Yeah. I have a feeling in the end she'll be a yes vote because she was a yes vote to begin with, and common sense of the MOU will win her at the last minute if that needs to happen. But, you know, with her, you just never know how she's going to land. So I guess I kind of hope she wins because she was a yes vote, but we'll have to see. And position eight, we have Tim Burgess, who was a critical part of the original MOU versus John Grant. How do you see that one going?
Well, that is probably one of the closest races going right now. Tim mm-hmm. was a yes vote, that's for sure. And his answers, he provided answers, just flat out yes, he supports the MOU and all that. And also, it can't be overstated what Tim did when the idea of Chris Hansen's proposal came forward. He really did take that and made it into something that the council could actually accept, could actually mm-hmm. work with. And it took a little while, but I think in the end, the taxpayers got a better deal out of the situation, that's for sure. And it'd be great if he came back.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember when this was all first when this was coming around the first time, it seemed like he was an opponent at first. It seemed like he was working against us, but it turned out he was really working for us, but he was also working for the taxpayers, and I think he did make it a deal that the city can be proud of. One of the most common sense arena deals you're going to find. If you look down in Sacramento, you're not going to find a common sense deal there. I don't think you're going to see one in Milwaukee. But Tim Burgess wrangled one in Seattle, and you got to give him credit for that. Position nine, Lorena Gonzalez versus Bill Bradbird. How's that one going?
Okay. Yeah, neither one of them gave me a response. I do. I have heard that Lorena Gonzalez would fairly consider the arena and the MOU, and might. Vote yes, depending on, you know, how it actually ends up looking at the very end. But and I do know that her opponent, Bill Bradbird, is an absolute no. And it looks right now that Gonzalez is probably going to win that race handily.
Well, let's hope so. All right, so that's the nine positions. I can't remember the exact margin the arena passed by. Was it 7-2?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yep.
So the original one passed 7-2, and obviously there's been a lot of things happened since then. If you had a gun to your head and someone had asked you to predict how these races were going to go, do you think the arena is going to be in trouble after this election, or do you think we're going to be okay?
I think we'll be okay. I think
okay.
On the low end, it would be 5 votes, and on the high end, probably 7 again.
Okay.
And I would say that the yes votes would be more emphatic.
Would be more emphatic.
That I think you'll definitely get a yes and a no. And the yeses will not, you know, you won't have a Sally Bagshaw, you know, being in the middle. People will have to pick a side to this at some point.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for coming on. I talk to you online all the time, but I think this might be the first time we've actually had a conversation by voice, and so it's good to meet you over the phone. I think we met at a meeting one time briefly, but I always enjoy your writing. I enjoy our interaction and our Google Hangout, and thanks for your hard work on that article today, and we'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Uh-huh. Bye.
That was Mike Baker of SonicsRising.com. And I was going to say we're going to take a short break and then come back, but if I do that, I'm going to lose my co-host. So, Otto, what did you make of that?
Yeah, that was, you know, really good breakdown by Mike, and I want to thank Lorenzo and Mike for coming on our first show. A really good breakdown by Mike. It looks like we still have the votes that we need. That city council position was a four between Maddox and Johnson. He said it could go either way. So that county, this council district number four, seems like it's kind of one of those swing, the swing votes, because Johnson was an emphatic yes, where Maddox was a no. I'm really interested on how that race goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you something else. We really need Burgess to win. We really do.
We do.
It's not just that he's a yes vote. It's that he's the architect behind the MOU. So his level of support is going to be much higher than your average level of support, even from a yes vote. So he's one that will actually work to push this through to the end. So we need that. Otto, you sent me a link that had something. It had to do with a
breaking
certain
news
team that we've discussed before, and it currently plays down in the desert. I didn't even open the link, but what are they saying about the Coyotes now?
So there's a report by Pierre LeBrun, ESPN's Pierre LeBrun, that is essentially stating that the owners, that the Arizona Coyotes are likely to relocate in Arizona.
In Arizona?
Basically what they're saying is that the Coyotes are going to get out. The city of Glendale, they ended the lease agreement with the Coyotes, and they're looking at the Coyotes are looking at Phoenix and Scottsdale. The owners want to have some sort of decision made, I guess, by the end of either – but I'm guessing in 2016, it says by the end of the year. But I'm not sure if it's end of this year or end of the season. But it said they want to have a place by the end of the year and move out of Glendale by the 2019-2020 season.
Well, I do think that would be a good move for them.
I do.
Yeah. Obviously, selfishly, you know, it would be nice if they're saying, oh, they're coming to Seattle. I don't really anticipate that happening. But you never know.
No, I don't.
Maybe they won't have
a solution by
2016.
You know what? You never know what's going to happen. Even LeBrun says that there's always a chance of location to another market altogether. It's likely they're going to go to either Scottsdale or Phoenix. But you know what? You know, how likely, you know, was the Kings situation in Seattle? How confident were we with that, right? So,
right.
You just never know what's going to happen. So, I'm not saying let's get on the bus to see the Coyotes here. I'm just saying just pay attention to what's going on down the desert, and pay attention to what's going on down in Florida as well. So, there was a report today that the Panthers have lost, you know, I believe like $156 million since like 2009, or some crazy astronomical number. So there's opportunities out there, potential opportunities for Seattle besides expansion. So
right.
Pay attention.
Well, and you know, it all comes down to the same thing every time: the arena. We have to get one of these arena proposals across the finish line before we can even seriously talk about any of these opportunities that might happen. So
exactly.
I encourage our listeners to get out there and vote in the city council races next week. Take a look at Mike Baker's article. Take a look at the responses from the candidates. And, you know, I'm not one that's a single-issue voter, but since I don't live in Seattle, just vote for the guys that will say yes on the arena. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and,
I'll say it. Just vote for the guys that will say yes.
And another
What's
thing,
that?
Well, I just wanted to add, you know, make sure to vote, you know, next Tuesday. Also, you know, we have four greats. You know, we have a bunch of hockey teams in the area. Go out, support the hockey teams. You got the WHL. You got other divisions. You have college hockey. There's a lot of great hockey out there. You know, go out and support those hockey teams. I mean, it's a great product, and it's even better in person.
Yeah, I have not experienced a Huskies game, but I'm going to head over there and catch a game this year. When he told me they had 500 people in the crowd at times, that actually surprised me. I envisioned maybe 20 or 30. But it sounds like it's kind of a fun environment and kind of boisterous. Have you been to one, Otto?
I have not, primarily because, you know, their start times are so late.
Yeah.
So.
And by the way, over the off season, you had a bit of a major change, did you not?
Oh, yes. I had a newborn, had a baby girl, baby daughter, at the end of August. So my lack of
congratulations.
Sleep and, thank you. My lack of sleep is huge right now. So.
Yeah, you find your lack of sleep disturbing, right?
I do.
Yeah. Okay, Otto. I know you got to go, so I'm just going to go ahead and end the show right here. I want to thank everyone for joining us and continuing to support the Seattle Sin Bin. We look forward to bringing you another season. We really enjoyed last season, and I know this season is going to be even different. I've got Steve Stearns working on new audio for the show as we speak, and hopefully we can air some of that next week. I want to thank Lorenzo Villalobos for joining us, our beat writer for the Huskies. I want to thank science writing author Mike Baker for joining us. And Otto, I want to thank you for being my co-host again this season. And we will see everyone on the other side. Have a great week, and good luck with everything.
Joining us in the Sin Bin with Paul Rogers.